I always say, Hank and Justin and Michael, you can't clean what you can't see. And too many times, we're throwing brushes down lumens that are 1.5, 2 millimeters. You don't know what's down that lumen. That's why they have microscopes on every workstation.
Beyond Clean offers a creative look into the inner workings of a healthcare industry committed to getting it right. Every instrument, every time. Join us every week as we explore the hidden world of one of the most important aspects of safe surgical care. And now your hosts, Michael Matthews, Hank Balch, and Justin Poulin.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Sean Flynn, Manager of Sterile Processing at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, along with his first and second shift supervisors, Rigo Cardenas and Andrew Esteva, to discuss their efforts to build the ideal sterile processing department, which is underway as we speak. And Hank, Mike, I'm really excited because also Sean is going to be the first guest we've had on for an encore appearance on Beyond Clean. So it's going to be great to welcome him back and hear what he's been doing in the interim since we last spoke to him in August.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys, we've all seen the pictures that Sean's been posting on his LinkedIn. We know what's coming. I have been spending time mentally preparing myself for the insane amount of envy that I'm about to experience through this conversation, but I am prepared for it and I'm really excited to talk to these guys.
We talk every episode almost about bringing these guests back on again. And as you said, Justin, this is the first time we're going to make it happen, and we're going to make it happen for a very different reason. And the first time we had Sean on talking about manufacturing and entrepreneurship in SPD, now he's a manager out in California at an up-and-coming children's hospital. Cannot wait to get into the specifics about what they have going on out there.
Still exercising his entrepreneurial spirit, though, in building a new department.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
Joining us now is Sean Flynn, Manager of Sterile Processing at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, along with his first and second shift supervisors, Rigo Cardenas and Andrew Esteva. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the show this week.
Thank you, guys. I'll go ahead and just say thank you for Rigo and Andrew. This is kind of their first introduction to Beyond Cleaned, and I'm privileged to actually introduce it to them, and I think we'll have a good show.
Well, it really is back to our very beginning roots. We released 3 episodes in August to kick it off, and Sean, your interview was part of that, and now you're our first guest that's a repeat on Beyond Clean. So why don't we start with what you've been doing since we last spoke with you? I know we've got some pretty incredible updates, and we're going to be talking about it on the show.
It's been a whirlwind. So I moved from the East Coast, but around in the August time frame, I was doing some consulting, and that was in the Minneapolis area, and got an opportunity to interview for a position here at Lucille Packard Children's Hospital. And I knew they were building a new hospital, but I really didn't know the intricacies and the specifics about what they were really building here in Palo Alto. So phone interview, they flew me out. And actually did a tour of the facility, and at that time it was enlightening to see that somebody was actually putting in an investment into an SPD department that I would hope that most hospitals would want to invest this much into an SPD department. So for me, that interview was eye-opening and both encouraging at the same time, and so I left saying if I did get the opportunity, I would be able to use my expertise and my broad depth of experience both on the med device side and the patient care side to help grow the program. Luckily, I got the opportunity, and I packed the bags and moved from Atlanta and moved to the West Coast and been here since November.
That's incredible, Sean. I know a lot of people who have been in SPD management oftentimes move out of the management side in order to move on to the vendor side and then to the consulting world, but you don't really hear too often about people coming back. What was it specifically that really drew you back into the world of management?
Because I have a unique background in the sense of the medical device side, the clinical side, and the management / director side, I thought that I would be able to bring a uniqueness to the position that normally wouldn't be able to bring to it if I just had one of those elements. And so for me, it was, hey, I'm intrigued. I want to see what I can now bring back, having had the experience without the medical device experience first time. Really just curious, wanted to see what type of program I could build. Because on the medical device side, really, that was my trial by fire, doing the ISO 13485 and getting the FDA clearance and being an integral part in getting that done. I think that was the uniqueness that I thought I needed to bring to the table and thought I could help the hospital. And it being a children's hospital, it puts an extra little emphasis on quality and attention to detail. And so I just saw the group in the hospital and what they were investing in as an opportunity to make it even a bigger enterprise with the team that I have. I do believe we'll be able to do that.
You have stirred up a lot of jealousy in the country with the photos that you've been posting of this beautiful, we'll say dream department out there in California. And in this first segment in particular, we want to highlight the design side of it. And I guess as we get into a little bit of that right now, if y'all could go over a few of the specs of the department, like what size are we talking about, pieces of equipment, different layout stuff, just so folks can, if they have not seen those jealousy inducing photos, so they can start to see what we're talking about in their mind.
I guess from historical context, I'll open it up to Rigo and Drew, because I think prior to getting into what we currently are in, I think they would be able to articulate what they came from, and the audience should be interested in that particular story. Rigo, you want to go first?
Sure. When they built the OR in Children's Hospital back in 2007, they were relying on the adult side, Stanford. So they converted one of the rooms into a sterile processing department. So you can imagine, how big the ORs are. So they converted the room into sterile processing, including 2 washers, 2 sterilizers, 2 sterile 100S and 1 NX. I mean, we were just like crowded in the little room with having like an average of 20, 25 cases daily. I mean, we were reprocessing, pre-cleaning the scopes in the same area where we also disinfect them. We had a little dryer there too and just one small window. It was just too crowded compared to what we have right now. Drew can help me to tell you, you know, what's going on in the old building that we used to have.
I think oftentimes you can take for granted what you have, and then when you move with a new place, you can look back at what you came from, and you're like, wow, I can't believe we operated from such a small place moving into our new facility now. This new building, our new facility, and how large it is, it was almost like a culture shock for all of our techs because we were so used to functioning in a small department, being arm's length away from each other. Now we barely even see each other. That's how large our department is, and it works best for us because we can do our daily functions in our own space. We are really, truly grateful and really happy for this opportunity. We're happy that Sean is really leading the way for us in our new department.
If you would, walk us through a little bit about what the design and construction process was like. I know it sounds like you hit on the tail end of everything coming in November, but I know you didn't go live in the new department until later on. Was it at the beginning of this year or was it late last year?
The first time we actually moved in, it was in December, the first part of December. I'll contextualize what the first time actually means when I get into some of the design elements. So prior to me arriving, they actually had a project manager, excellent project manager, who basically she orientated to sterile processing, didn't know anything about sterile processing, and rolled her sleeves up. I would treat her as a subject matter expert. That's really how in depth she got into the design components, what all needed to go into the department from a regulatory standpoint, from a compliance standpoint. She was integral in helping organize all the training for the team members. And so I just want to, you know, at least say that she was very, very helpful and a very pivotal person in getting us to where we're at now. And so I couldn't say what I'm about to say without acknowledging her. Her first name is Francesca. She just did an excellent job.
That is a good reminder for folks out there that you can be a good project manager even without a thorough sterile processing background, as long as you take that time, like you said, to orient yourself to the processes, to the culture, to what's actually going on in this space that you're about to coordinate the construction of. So it's encouraging to hear that and see that. We know that happens, you know, but there's a temptation to think like you got to come from 30 years background in order to build or to manage a project like this successfully, but it's just not true. You can do it if you dedicate yourself and immerse yourself into becoming the mind of sterile processing through that whole project. So thank you for sharing that.
No, you're welcome. Couldn't do it without her. Speaking for Drew and Rigo, I'm sure they would say the same thing, particularly in reference to training. And
she was on top of things, scheduling, meeting, huddles, training. She was calling us, you know, the day before, you know, get ready for this training, you know, yeah. Get your people ready.
Yeah, meeting with vendors, coordinating them to come in and train. Not to, you know, belabor the point, but I do put a point of emphasis on the role that she played. And then in reference to the design, the whole facility as a whole is just top-notch. I mean, they did spend a great amount of money on the facility, meaning the hospital. So rightfully so, there's a lot of investment that went into sterile processing as well. And one of the things that surprised me very much was the space. Most sterile processing departments that I go to, they design it years before you actually move in. And by the time you move in, you've already outgrown that space. And this won't be the case. We'll be able to at least be in this footprint maybe for the next 10 years. So when I got here in December, they were actually fine-tuning the training, getting everybody ready for licensing. And so that was a big ordeal in the sense that everybody moved into the new space except for the operating rooms. So those aren't going to open till June. Literally, you had PICU, PACU, L&D, sterile processing, facilities, housekeeping was in the process of training and getting ready for licensing. So it was actually it was a fun experience, but it was actually a lot of work at the same time. You know, once licensing occurred, then we got the green light to actually move in. And one of the things in moving into a new facility, you can plan to your heart's content, but you really don't know what you need in it until you move in it. The big stuff that you can think of, the sterilizers, the Medivators, or whatever you have for your AERs, your washers, all that stuff, you know, you can think of. But little things like whiteboards, where you're going to have a huddle at, carts, you know, just the things you take for granted in other facilities or other spaces, again, you really don't know until you move in. And Rigo and Drew, feel free to chime in there.
We won't really learn or know what we're going to need unless we actually go through the workflows. So being a new facility, we try to do our daily routine as if it were an old space, but it's come to find since it's a larger space or we're without certain things. It's only then in that instance, we try to figure out things that we truly need, like the whiteboard or missing tape or like those boxes that hold indicators or just certain shelving, things like that. We compile a list of things and we kind of send it to Sean to, hey, we need these things, but it's only up until as we open, as we're going through them. We can't truly prepare for it unless we're actually going through it.
I mean, I'll give you an example. We moved in, there were no tape dispensers on the workstation. You know, just something that you see everything in the department, you're like wowed by its vastness, but that small little minor detail we didn't have. So you had to take the ones that you had in the old space into the new space. You know, that's just one example.
Printer paper.
We didn't printer have paper. Yeah, printer paper, you know. Just little office supplies, things you just take advantage of. And the other thing that we noticed, too, when we moved into the facility was that the distance. Because the ORs didn't move, we literally have to take the closed case carts down the hall, up the elevator, down another hall, to the front desk, and then to the rooms, which just to get to the front desk usually is about 4 minutes. You can imagine the running back and forth, not just to take the case cards, but to fill requests from the room to say, hey, can you bring me this particular piece of equipment or this particular pack? So the workflows actually became a little bit challenging because just the vastness of the department, the walk, and then the limited staff or personnel that we had. Because I had to take basically two FTEs during the day just to run and bring case cards. And so when you do that, then you have a deficit in somewhere else, and mainly that's prep and pack or decon or what have you. So lots of learning experiences. And then the first time we moved, like with any new construction, and I'll just say this with all full disclosure, every facility that I've been in that's new construction always has facilities, things that they have to iron out. And in this particular case, it had to do with conductivity in the water. For the listening audience, it's very important for you to actually do your water testing, do your TOSI testing. And I say TOSI, whatever challenge device that you're using for your washers would be sufficient. But you have to do those things because you can see things possibly before facilities might see them, particularly in a new construction when everything is opening up. You know, people are all drinking from the fire hydrant. You're the subject matter expert in your department, so you have to do those things to make sure that it's working in an optimal way. And what ended up happening is we had high conductivity in the water, and the DI system, the filters actually clogged up. And so they stopped making DI water or RO water. And so with that happened, all your washers, your cart washers, sterilizers shut down because of not having the appropriate final rinse water. Just some, you know, little tidbits and hiccups along the way. But again, I've never been into a new facility where it didn't have those challenges. And so my job as a leader is to, you know, help ease the team and help them navigate through that. And quite frankly, some of the best ideas have come from the teams. Drew, you want to elaborate on any of that?
When I see issues and I see you address them, it's eye-opening for me because I feel I'm relatively green to the field. So when you talk about RO water or checking for things, that for me is almost like a mentorship, or I'm learning on a daily basis. So any type of issues that I may miss and you catch for me and for the rest of the team, it is something that we do learn on a daily basis. But as far as things that we catch that I may have missed, usually catch them first and I kind of just follow along.
No, I'll catch everything. I mean, Rigo can elaborate on this. One of his employees on second shift actually caught something to do with a compliance issue, and he addressed it in the team huddle, and we basically fixed it in real time. And so I know, Hank, you elaborate on this sometimes within your postings on LinkedIn relating to techs needing to speak up when they see something that shouldn't happen. And in this case, he actually did, and appreciate that. And that's just a testament to the culture that was here before I even got here.
It was a big change.
It's amazing that, you know, just background on me, we opened our new hospital about a year and a half ago. It's crazy to me that some of the same issues that you've listed are the exact same issues that we saw when we were opening our department, including the conductivity challenge with our RO water generator. We had the exact same issue. And it had something to do with, I think, a new construction. I can tell you, since we ordered all new surgical instruments when we started up, the first time we saw an issue was that we had took these beautiful brand new instruments, put them in the sterilizer, and they all came out brown. And that was like being punched in the stomach when the first time you saw that. And it's the little things that you don't think about. I remember the one thing that drove me up the wall trying to get ready for was trying to find the right stamps for our sterilizer loads. For some reason, that was so hard to find, and it's something that you just assume is always ready to go. I wanted to ask you, though, I know you're a big advocate of lean processing. How much did lean and your understanding of lean impact your design preferences?
Early on, a lot of the elements were already moved into the facility. And the unique thing about California is you have to, anything that's attached to the wall or hovers along the wall that's higher than 6 feet has to be tethered either to the wall, or it actually has to be bolted to the ground. And that's for earthquake, damage prevention. Mm-hmm. Some of the lean elements that I would have implemented or put in place prior to, I couldn't do because of that, because things are actually bolted to the ground or tethered to the wall. Now, having said that, in the prep and pack space, there was an opportunity to actually adjust the workstation so that the team who were actually assigned to prep and pack could have a visual sight to the washer as well as to the status board, so they look left and right and, you know, can see. That was one thing. Another lean element was to standardize all the workstations so that they're the same no matter who sits in them. In Decon, I'm exploring looking at some other lean methodology just to reduce the amount of steps that the technician has to take to perform their task. But a lot of those elements won't be in place until we open the clean and dirty elevator. I would just answer it in that way, and in reference to doing spaghetti diagrams and things like that to reduce, you know, the actual footprint of the staff. Those things will come later.
So it's an ongoing continuous improvement process. It's not like a one-time design thing.
No, for sure, no. Because one of the things I wanted to do was have the staff actually move in and me observe where they're actually placing things. Because I can put things where I think they go, but the staff know, and that's their space. So why not use them and their ideas to then incorporate where you're going to place certain things? It's their workspace. And so I don't want to violate that, and I want to listen to them and their ideas and implement them. So, you know, Rigo, you want to elaborate on any of those things that, you know, kind of you noticed since we moved in from a lean standpoint?
No, I mean, everything that we have so far, you know, all the racks to the walls, all the equipment that is bolted to the floor, I mean, that's it's something that, you know, some other facilities don't have, you know, and here, safety first. And, yeah, I mean, we have a lot of potential to implement new things, especially in the scope room, the pre-cleaning process. I mean, it's like you say, it's a work in progress. You know, we're still growing. You know, we only have 7 employees on my shift.
Yep.
But eventually we're going to grow up to hopefully 15 people. So there's a lot of potential for us to think, you know, okay, what are we going to do, you know, about the workflow, locations, et cetera, you know.
You got to crawl before you walk. And so with all the distractions of the new space, I didn't want to implement too many things too quickly.
That's really great advice, especially to others that are listening today to this podcast about how to plan new construction. And I think there's some takeaways there. I really like, Sean, how you allow people to have some ownership for the new department. I'm sure that not only builds goodwill amongst the employees, but it also gives them a sense of ownership and control over how things are going to work. And it just makes things work a lot smoother. So this is great information, and I can't wait to get into segment 2. We'll be talking about your vision and leadership and the impact of technology and communication. So we'll be right back. We're back with Sean Flynn, Manager of Sterile Processing at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, along with first and second shift supervisors Rigo Cardenas and Andrew Esteva. Everything that's been on LinkedIn, guys, it's really showing your vision for setting the industry standard for SPD. So talk a little bit more in depth about that vision from a big picture standpoint. Why does it matter that the department is the best?
Well, it started when I actually flew out for the interview. I actually have, at that time, director in who came from the Cleveland Clinic, who, to my surprise, knew a great deal about sterile processing from an administration standpoint. That was refreshing for me. And I can say that was one of the components that made me agree or want the position even more, is because to be around a team of people in leadership who actually understand the importance of the department, I think is one key component that you have to have if Sterile Process is going to be successful. And so with that, we had a very robust and in-depth conversation about vision and what we would like to see in the department with the new hospital, to include expanding and bringing on new service lines, repatriating 30-plus clinics that the adult side was actually processing instruments for us. And so out of that conversation just spawned the idea that I wanted to implement ISO into the facility. So that's an overarching larger goal for the department, and that was set in stone when during that interview. We agreed that if, you know, I did get the opportunity, that that was one of the things that I was going to do. When I did the tour of the department, it's basically, they gave me the keys to the Bugatti, and they needed a driver, right? I looked at it and said, okay, guys, let's build a track, and let's put the pedal to the metal and to the floor and hit it. That's what we've been doing since day one. And so the first phase of implementing ISO is going to be a lot of the quality elements that we're bringing to the department. The first portion of that was related to repatriating a lot of the clinics, which is actually about 30-plus clinics all over North Cal. And that's when we brought the laser in to do the 2D etching or lasering. It's actually an annealed mark on the actual instrument. But I needed a way to actually track those from an instrument level standpoint, because many of the clinics have similar instruments. And you don't want to get into a situation where you're getting phone calls every morning about items that are lost, the courier didn't deliver it, the courier delivered it some other location. And so the laser, and then using SPM, the instrument level tracking component, afforded us the ability to actually repatriate those and actually track them down to the instrument level so that we would not do the same thing that our predecessors have done in the past. Rigo, you want to kind of walk through that process?
Yeah, absolutely, because as always before, you know, we just color-coded the instruments, but it's still they get mixed. Then later on, the clinics are calling, you lost my instruments. So now with this new system, you know, now it's a unique number for a unique instrument. You know, so there's no way an instrument is going to go to a different facility or clinic in this case, because now it has a unique information for that particular instrument. You know, so that's going to save us a lot of time and money, because obviously, you know, we used to buy their instruments because, as you know, it's always SPD's fault, you know.
Yeah, we never heard that one before.
Yeah, not anymore.
Yes, exactly.
I know back last fall, we talked to Don Williams actually about his vision for centralized processing in a Kaiser system for ambulatory surgical centers and clinics. And, you know, he talked a lot about that challenge just from the budgetary standpoint. How do we control and plan ahead if we can't even keep track of that instrumentation? So that's huge, you know, being able to do that. Not only with the laser, you know, but once you have those laser markings to track them through a system like SPM to drive that higher standard.
Here's the thing, Hank. It kind of merges over into some of what you might want to look for in ISO. Now, a lot of facilities, if you're not tracking on the instrument level, at least with your peel packs, your clinic items, and or your, you know, one of a kind, like your batteries and things like that, you're really not tracking them to the point where you understand the shelf life in real time. Now, most of these instruments, they are, if not all of them, they have a prescribed shelf life per the manufacturer. But that was usually done or tested in a lab setting, not in a real life scenario where you have multiple couriers, you have multiple people, multiple touch points. Things get beat up, things get dropped. We'll have the capability of doing now is actually tracking things, tracking usage, and then understanding or getting some visibility on shelf life. That transfers into budgetary elements in the sense of I then can then track, okay, in this quarter, we didn't lose X amount of instruments. So from a standpoint of the department maybe not being a revenue generating center, I can then at least say we're a revenue saving or cost saving center. And so it helps me go to administration and actually detail out the initiatives and the cost-saving measures or things that we're putting in in place to them to build up the importance of the department for the hospital. There's too many times, you know, if you're not promoting SBD, you're in the basement, and so you're out of sight, out of mind. I use a lot of these elements to actually promote SPD, particularly when you're talking about quality and inspection and bringing the physicians in to actually, you know, showcase what we're doing to ensure patient safety and instruments that actually work on the patients and don't malfunction. So that's just one element, Hank, with the laser.
Oh, that's right, Sean. And we had a guest on, Renee Viz, back earlier this year talking about how to run a sterile processing department like a business. And you're right. Even if you're not bringing in revenue, there's still huge opportunity to save on waste. And when you do that, to communicate to your customers and your administration the success that you're having. I've kind of joked around before, if you complete a process improvement project, but no one notices, it really happened, you know. So that's why I'm just a huge advocate of, you really got to, all the moving and shaking that's going on in the basement, there's a huge impetus on the part of the leaders to highlight that success and to recognize their teams, you know, for the progress that they're taking part in. And that's, you know, on this next question, we've talked about the beautiful department, the great design and insight that has come into it. We talked about the vision there to be the best, not only in California, but I'm assuming you want to be the best around the globe. In order for that to happen, you've got to have good leadership. So I was wondering if your team could talk a little bit about what is different about the way you're planning to lead this team into that vision for excellence.
I'm a big proponent about leading by example. We would never ask anybody to do anything we couldn't do ourselves. And as a result of that, I really think that it really built a foundation for our team. They've seen us do it, and no one ever feels singled out or is in a situation where they absolutely lost, because everybody's got the experience. We constantly give people the opportunity to step up or try something new on a daily basis. To answer your question, what makes us different is this constant rotation of duties. And when appropriate, we added more responsibilities, whether they're new or old.
And it makes a big difference when your manager, you know, has a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience versus other managers when they don't know what the store process is all about, you know, because now, you know, your manager asks you a question and you're like, oh, hey, that's right. You know, I never thought about that, you know, and, you know, because the manager that knows what the store process is all about, you know, they ask the right questions and they lead you the right way versus other managers that don't have that experience. And that makes a big difference. In order for me to understand what's going on in my department, I needed my manager to be very knowledgeable. So, you know, he can lead me as a sample, you know, and also for me to lead my coworkers as well.
And it's funny that they said that, and I didn't ask them to say any of that. But one of the things I do on a daily basis, and they'll see me, I pick up trash. I'm in decon. I'm breaking down containers. I'm in prep and pack. I'm adding stuff in the SPM. You know, I'm doing the job just like they are, because the quickest way you can learn and get to know your team is to actually be with your team. You can't do it from the tower, and you can't do it from your office. And so, you know, the other thing is, if I'm in the space with them, I feel their pain. And so when I go to other departments, and having had that clinical experience in other departments, i.e. OR or, you know, wherever, I can be that bridge to articulate, you know, what we're facing. I'll give you an example. The distance, just the sheer distance from the OR to SPD, if you've never walked it, you really don't understand it. And so what tends to happen is when you're in the operating room in your, let's say your room number 9, and you need something, well, all you're really thinking about is what you need in room number 9, and you really don't understand that maybe 10 other rooms are calling that same person in sterile processing. You put in the perspective of the distance, and that one person who's assigned to be a runner, they're out of the department. So the first person you talk to is not the second person you talk to. So in your room number 9, you're thinking, hey, these guys are blowing me off, and that's not the case. And so being in the trenches with the team and understanding what they go through on a daily basis helps me better manage the team. If I had to give any advice for any future leader, don't manage from your ivory tower or don't manage from your desk, because you're just going to set yourself up for failure.
So, guys, I got to ask, you know, we've already talked about the laser and its impact on, you know, individual instrument tracking. I just was kind of curious, you know, what is your personal favorite piece of new technology that you've got in your department?
Actually, yeah, I'm excited about the lasering, but there's another one coming. We don't have it yet. You know, it's the scope.
Scope control.
The scope control. You know, I can't wait to see that one, you know, so we can actually check every suction, every scope.
You're talking about the inspector.
The inspector.
Yeah, that's for the pre-clean as well as the prep and pack station.
Yes.
For the flexible scope.
Yes, I can't wait to see that one because that'll be a tremendous help for us to make sure, you know, every suction is clean inside out. And same thing with the flexible scopes, you know, especially the flexible scopes.
Yeah.
You know, so we can do some QAs to the scopes after they've been disinfected and prior to the, after the pre-cleaning. So, yeah, I can't wait to see that technology coming.
I always say, Hank and Justin and Michael, you can't clean what you can't see. And too many times we're throwing brushes down lumens that are 1.5, 2 millimeters. You don't know what's down that lumen. That's why they have microscopes on every workstation. You know, when in doubt, look at it. And if it looks like it's either cracked, there's a defect, you know, put it out of circulation. Or if it's bioburden, send it back to Decon. But at least you know now and can get a visual of things that are on a microscopic level. Drew, what would you think would be your, you know, new favorite technology that either is coming or is actually in the department?
I really like our steam sterilizers. They're fully automated. We have currently in our prep and pack station about 8 stations. When we're fully at full power with full employees and all those stations are full of people assembling and we can really pump out all the sets ready to be assembled, we can actually queue up carts ready to be steam sterilized, and they'll automatically pull the carts in and then push them out and have them cool down and then so on and so forth rather than manually pushing and pulling everything in there yourself. So the sterilizers for me is a big upgrade from what we used to have. We used to have just one sterilizer. Now we have 4. Also, too, the steam sterilizers, they interface with our SPM, so we can completely go paperless. So it's just less scanning for us. It tells us step, and it reminds the tech step by step what you're supposed to do. Even if you forget, even if you have an off day, you just abide by what SPM, the interface tells you what to do, and you just can't go wrong. So for me, it would be the steam sterilizers interfacing with our new SPM.
There's something you're making a point there as far as efficiencies. It's not just favorite technology and new technology, but maybe your favorite aspect of technology is that it's integrated and that it automates many of those processes. And even when you were describing just the microscopes and all the different equipment that you have in there, it kind of gives me this white coat lab feel to your department instead of the dirty and then the clean and then everything's a little outdated and you're just trying to get through the day. It almost has this like manufacturing engineering component combined with like a lab setting. And I'm actually getting a completely different visual about what your department looks like compared to many of the departments that I've walked into over the last several years.
Hey, I always say that in the future, sterile processing, they won't be called technicians. They'll be called probably medical device reprocessing engineers or something like that, because the science of it and the way the instrumentation is developing and becoming so intricate and detailed and smaller and smaller and smaller, you have to have a set of individuals who can pay attention to detail, who can actually do the inspection, know somewhat the functionality, so they can properly inspect it and know the material makeup of some of the devices. Certain resins don't work well in this, your low temp sterilizers. Certain resins do, you know, it just depends. And, you know, the days of washing basin sets and being in the basement, those days are over with. To your point, Justin, I do think that, you know, that lab coat setting, that not necessarily a clean room setting, but one in the sense that we are running a factory. I do treat the guys and gals on the team as subject matter engineers. You know, that's the culture that, you know, we want to create. Thank you for pointing that out.
I like that term, subject matter engineer. I like that a lot. That's very appropriate for, I think, today's challenges in the industry. So you'll have to hashtag that and put a patent on it and make sure that, you own that. So.
Dude, don't copyright it, Hank. Don't copyright it.
I think Hank's probably filing the patent claim right now.
No, don't copyright it. And to piggyback off the question about the technology, I think for me, from a broader sense related to ISO, I think all the quality elements and all the equipment that I'm bringing that does interface with, let's say, SPM or your BIs that interface with SPM, that's all exciting to me because I see where if you spend any time in a quality management system, those subject matter experts resemble that to a spider web. And you have to know where all the dots are connected. And if you pull on one string or one web, it moves the other things. And so the way I envision or look at sterile processing is that there are all these elements, let's say the inspector or the boroscope. There's the ATP test to where you can qualify or quantify that your washing process is actually doing what it was supposed to do. You have your scope control unit that actually checks your rigid scopes to make sure that the light fibers inside and the rod lenses are actually working. So then you can actually give a report to the physician and say, no, this is exactly what we do before we send it up so that we know it's 100% operable. And on the reverse side, when the instruments go out for repair, we then have the ability to actually inspect those and then validate that they've actually been repaired to spec. I'm just excited to have all those elements and to be able to put it in place because hopefully if we publicize it correctly and do what we're supposed to do and actually achieve our ISO certification, it might motivate the industry to say, hey, we need to invest in this department and do right by the professionals that are actually in the department. They literally are the lifeblood of any OR, and any OR that's worth its soul, they'll tell you that. And you can't do any procedures without sterile processing.
Absolutely not.
I'll get off my soapbox now, but all those elements are fascinating to me, and to be able to do it with this team and to be able to build the team, I'm just excited about it.
Also, we can be a role model for other hospitals, for the whole industry. I heard that about Stanford, about Children's Hospital. I saw that at Children's Hospital. To be proud of it.
It starts as a dream. It develops into a vision, and now you're making it into reality, gentlemen. So just wanted to thank you for sharing your experience, especially while it's so fresh, because when all the development is, I don't want to say done because it's never done, but when the majority of it is done and everything's just rolling, you kind of get into that grind. And so catching you now while it's still all coming together is a really excellent time to have you on this podcast, to have you share your experience with our listeners and have them think about things when the time comes up for them to potentially redevelop their departments as well. So just wanted to say as we wrap here, thank you very much again for coming on and making time to speak with Mike and Hank and myself.
Well, thank you. My second rodeo. So, it's always a pleasure for me. And then, when you guys asked, it'd be a good idea to, bring Rigo and Drew in and expose them to the podcast, welcome them to the community of folks that are, in this industry. It's a large industry.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hyde, for having me.
Appreciate you guys having us. This is a new experience for me. It's a pleasant one, and I was excited to be here, so thank you.
That was Sean Flynn, Manager of Sterile Processing at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, along with his first and second shift supervisors, Rigo Cardenas and Andrew Esteva. Guys, I could just feel the jealousy coming off of the both of you. I loved that he coined the phrase subject matter engineer on Beyond Clean, and also the vision. I have not walked into their department, but the vision for it, I really felt like I was able to conceptualize what it looked like. And it's really a vision for the SPD of the future is what I'm seeing in my mind versus what's going on today. And there are still many state-of-the-art facilities, but I know they're not getting always every piece of equipment or tool that they need to really be on the cutting edge. And I just feel like at this point, they haven't had to make a lot of hard choices about, well, you know what? We'll get this one, but we won't be able to get this one and this one. It almost seems like they're getting most of what they need to really build something that is state of the art.
Justin, a few years ago, I had the opportunity to plan and design a new department as well. But then I left the health system a couple of months before we got to move in. And I was so, so disappointed, kind of like carrying a baby for 9 months and then you give the baby up for adoption. It was the same thing, for the department. I didn't get to experience what Sean and his team has gone through. Now, it sounds like I also didn't have to deal with the sleepless nights with the new baby department as well, you know, figuring out the kinks and the kinds of things like, where do we put the whiteboard or do we have room for the trash cans? And it was just helpful to hear that perspective. I know for folks who are either going through that now on a large scale, or maybe they're just doing a little construction in a particular space, but you still need to be asking those specific details of how is this actually going to work when we put people in it. So I really drew a lot from this episode, and I was really glad to have those supervisors on as well to hear their frontline perspective.
Yeah, and Justin, to your point, we didn't really get a chance to talk about it much, but you know, I feel like we really do need to commend the leadership of the hospital there for, you know, enabling that department to really achieve its vision and to really take hold of a lot of that new technology. And honestly, that technology that they're using is expensive, but somebody there in the senior leadership said that, you know, we're going to do the best for our patients, and that's just the way it's going to be. And so, you know, we really have to give them a shout out for that commitment to patient safety in SPD and taking it seriously. You know, it's amazing what a department can look like when it has the backing of the upper level leadership. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. I was dripping with jealousy from, you know, minute one.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to see why there's a lot of envy inducing technology that is in that department. And I'm sure lots of listeners will be thinking and feeling the same things that we do in listening to how that team has built it. And the leadership is a big piece of it too. I like, you know, to Hank's point, how he incorporated the team and the design. That's certainly a wise choice as far as building the right culture, not just the right department, but building the right culture within the department. But that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and review because your feedback is important to the show. If you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send us an email to info@beyondclean.net. And one other reminder, make sure you go to the website beyondclean.net to register for our big event at this year's Isham Conference. We're very excited about that. And on behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.